This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. It's good to be with you. My name is Gareth Armstrong. Beside me, the ever lovely Lubian boy Arnold. How are you, Lubian?
It's been a while since we've been in studio together, Gareth.
Together, yeah. It keeps on happening where we do separate shows. You're very busy shooting all sorts of films and TV
and
series.
And you're busy with Henley and all the good stuff that comes out of there.
Yeah, so it's good to be with you today. And the reason I need you with me today is because we have a very complicated show, which sometimes feels like a complicated show. The topic we're going to be talking about today is blockchain,
cryptocurrency,
Bitcoin, yeah, Ethereum, all these
these
words that are being thrown at us, and I don't think even the experts sometimes know what they're talking about. But we do have an expert in studio. Do you want to do a very, very quick introduction? And we're going to call him an expert. Why? Because, well, actually, him and his team are starting their own cryptocurrency. I don't think people who... no one's going to understand it better than people that start their own cryptocurrency.
I would just like to introduce, and thank you so much for spending your time, and without any holding back, allow us to enter into your world of cryptocurrency and economics and want to alleviate poverty in Africa, and I know that you've worked in Eastern Asia as well. So without any further ado, Justin McCarthy, welcome so much to Future CEOs. You today are the educator. I hope you realize that, because we're here as future CEOs and as entrepreneurs, and as you know, the entrepreneurial journey is always continuous with learning, and it's always great to learn new business models and break old school business models. So welcome to the show, Justin McCarthy.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice that I was able to...
Sorry.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to be able to reunite you two.
Yes, thank you.
Always a good sign.
Who are you, very quickly? So
yes.
We understand that you've got this a certain illustrious history that goes back quite a long time. But as you sit here, and I know I can see your eyes rolling, but as you sit here, you're the chief executive of a project which is deeply entrenched in blockchain cryptocurrency. Just a very 2 minute. Who are you, please?
Okay. I'm a pretty regular guy. The first thing I'm going to say is, without an intro, is that I am not an expert.
Okay.
And anybody who tells you that they are an expert in crypto or blockchain, there are experts, but in crypto in general, because there are now probably about 1,400 around the world listed on exchanges.
Wow.
Can I use... like alternative language?
Yeah,
is BS.
Yeah.
It is such a nascent technology. There are so many multiple applications, which we'll get into some of that. So I am not an expert in crypto. I'm not an expert in blockchain.
But what you're saying is that those who claim they are experts can't really do that either.
No, there are experts. There are experts, like, for instance, in Bitcoin. There are experts in Ethereum. There are experts in certain types of dev. And coding, et cetera, but in the entire space, there's so much happening, and it's so broad, and it's so deep, and it's so young and nascent that nobody can claim to be an expert in all of those things. So there are probably, in my view, around about 200 to 200 people in the world who could use the term expert in relation to blockchain or specific cryptocurrencies or specific types of cryptocurrencies.
Okay, so you're not an expert, but what you are doing is you're building a business around blockchain. You're developing a cryptocurrency. We'll get into that.
Developed,
okay. Yeah. And we'll get into that in the next part of the show. So let's then tap your understanding, which is probably near expert level anyway, around blockchain, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and let's pull it apart a little bit, because they are very separate things, and what people seem to think is that they're all one.
What's our interpretation? Absolutely.
Yeah. And so where do we actually begin? And let's build a house together here today. Our audience want to understand it from the ground up. What's the foundation? What are we actually digging up?
And what are we talking about when it comes to our businesses?
Okay. So there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of answers and a few questions there.
So we're just throwing it at you.
You can keep throwing them at me. But, so you guys just steer the ship and I'm going to talk. Okay. And I'm renowned as a talker, so cut me off when I'm talking too much. Okay.
Right, a speaker.
So,
yes.
What I would like to say, Klubi, to your point about learning is that I'm 52 years old, and I got into blockchain tech. Yeah. Space got into it less than 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I have self-educated, which is the best way to do it. I'm not a coder. Mm-hmm. I'm not a quant. I'm not a mathematician. I don't even understand the mathematics in our own white paper. And trust me, you have to have a master's degree in maths to understand that level of mathematics. Just reflecting on your show itself and your listeners, it's never too late to stop learning. In fact, you never stop learning. It's all an attitude.
Thank you.
So I come from a marketing communications background. I got into tech, into two specific areas of tech well over a decade ago. One of them was telcos, specifically mobile technology across Africa, with MTN in particular and others, and in the Middle East. And the other was in media technology, because coming out of the communications advertising background, media with tech was. And Cliff Central, as a living example, living, breathing, working example of how tech has changed media and is continuing to change media. Media is a subject very, 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 very close to my heart. I am an outspoken libertarian. I believe in freedom of speech. I do offend people. My view is live with it. If you're not prepared to have an open mind, then you're not really going to learn that much. It's principle. So back.
Yeah. So give it to us then, as directly as only probably then you know how to do. Blockchain,
okay.
Bitcoin, Ethereum. What is the difference? What are we not seeing? What are we seeing?
And define.
Okay. So I'm going to start with blockchain, because everything, the technology that underlies all cryptocurrencies is blockchain.
Okay.
It underlies a whole lot of other applications that are still being discovered. So the first instance of blockchain technology came from the Bitcoin team. Mm-hmm. The pseudonymous Satoshi Nakamoto, and we could spend an hour on the conspiracy theories as to who he, she, they are, but let's forget that. Satoshi's white paper, which is all of 8 pages, 9 if you include the references, is in my mind probably as influential, or will turn out in history to be judged in history as influential as Newton's law of gravity, or any other laws of fundamental laws of physics. It's that fundamental.
Really?
It really, really is changing.
I'm having a great time, and the show hasn't even begun. I could be here for hours. Carry on, Justin. Carry on.
Okay.
Yes.
Just keep on dropping gems.
Just keep on dropping them gems.
but that is, when you say that it's that fundamental, it really is, because the internet is so pervasive now that it's everywhere. And so blockchain is fundamentally digitally based.
It's only digital. Exclusively.
Okay. And what that really means is that everything digital we can measure. There is some kind of footprint, there is some kind of record, and that's where blockchain really comes in, to expose that. Is that correct? Remember, we're laymen here. This is a layman's interpretation of it, and you stand here to correct us.
You're correct to a point.
Yes.
They're not incorrect in anything you said. What blockchain is about is an immutable record of account. Okay, that's one part of what blockchain is about. So what that means, immutable, means, for people who aren't well versed in the English language, means it's irrefutable.
Yeah, it can never
and it can never be erased or reversed.
Yes.
Well, it can technically, but I really don't want to go down. That's another rabbit hole as to how you do that. The longest chain, which happens with hard forks and soft forks and various other things, which I want to avoid getting into too much technical stuff.
Please.
Because this is I really do, because I'm not a tech expert either. I guess there's probably two or three real fundamentals of blockchain. The first is that it's an immutable record, and I'll explain how and why that is. It's an immutable record, and the second is, and more importantly, is that it is a proper blockchain is not just decentralized. because you have centralization, for instance. Let's talk Bitcoin. We'll get onto Ethereum. I'm going to use Bitcoin as the first point of reference at this juncture.
Sure.
And then when we get deeper into the conversation about what's the difference between when we've got a basic grasp on blockchain, a basic grasp on Bitcoin, I'm going to then go into Ethereum, which is a completely different protocol.
Sure.
So, and protocol are a very important term. So HTML is a protocol.
HTML.
The stuff that runs
a coding protocol.
It's a coding protocol. Mm-hmm. And there are multiples throughout the type. TCP/IP in email, for instance. Those were the foundation stones of communication and the internet, etc. Nobody ever sold HTML. Nobody ever sold TCP/IP. It was developed by coders, just could stick with coders, who contributed in an open source environment because they wanted to. Because they wanted to make the world a better place, or whatever their ideology, driving ideology was. But they never got paid for it. Mm. And nor do any of the developers in any of the major blockchain cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, for instance.
None of them. And there are other examples of these open source communities that do it because they just want to improve the world. I mean, we just look at a Wikipedia, for example, which is a nice popular one. We look at something like a WordPress kind of environment, which is very similar, open source, massive, all around the world. It's used now, and it's fundamental. And I think where you're going potentially with this is that it's adopted and it's used, and you the future is that thing.
Well, the adoption, like anything in economics, adoption is determined by the rate of adoption is determined by its usability and its functionality and serving an unmet need.
Correct.
And just quickly, I just want to put a little caveat in here. This, what you've just described, is a very important part of the conversation to understand for the following conversation that we're going to have around Project Ubu. But that's the second half hour. Let's go back to this half hour. But what you've just said is hugely important.
Yeah. So back to where were we? Blockchain.
Blockchain.
I distract myself very readily. So back to blockchain. So there's centralized forms of governance. There's decentralized forms of governance, and then there's what we call, get my note out, distributed. I keep forgetting the term, the second time today I've forgotten it. And distributed networks. And if you Google centralized networks, and your users Google it, there's probably the most infamous simple diagram in the world, which I've got with me to show you, which is the difference between the three.
We'll take a picture of that.
And you can take a picture, you can lift it off Google. Okay. Yeah. And what's so fundamental about, there are many operations that are decentralized. So let's talk about the sharing economy, the so-called sharing economy. And there's a local, local professor of political economics called Professor Lorenzo Fioramonti, who's the head of the department at Tux University and does all those stuff at Gibbs Business School. And I'm going to refer to him because he's been a great supporter of our project, and I'm going to give him a little bit of a punt on air, not because he's a friend of mine, because he's not, but when I read his book, his latest book.
Which was?
Which is, I'm not asking a 52-year-old how to remember the name.
Okay, we'll get
a book that I read like 6 months ago. Sorry, I read about 12 a month. The well-being economy. The well-being economy.
Thank you.
Google it, check it out. Read it. It's a fantastic book. And he makes many points, which lots of others have made. You know, Harari, for instance, in Homo Deus and various other books. There's lots and lots of authors who've written about this. But the fundamentals of distributed networks means that there's no middleman.
Mm-hmm.
There's no centralized, what we term in regular English, trusted third party, such as a bank, a reserve bank, a central bank, a clearing institution, a Visa, whatever, whatever it may be, a lawyer if you're doing contracts, etc., etc. A property agent or a transfer attorney. What do they call them? There's a name for them. I've forgotten that. It doesn't matter. That the network of individuals has a certain degree of visibility. Well, in fact, they have full visibility of in a transaction. Let's call it a transaction just for simple terms. Stay with Bitcoin. So if I send you some Bitcoin, one step back. What Satoshi Nakamoto did with the Bitcoin protocol was they solved what is commonly known in economics as the double spend problem. If I pay you 1,000 rand in notes, you're guaranteed the money. If I say I'll EFT you or I'll swipe my card, it has to go to a third party.
It's charged.
So that's a whole other. But the point is that it goes through a central organization, being a bank or a financial institution of some sort, shape or form, and says, yes, I have enough. I have 1,000 rand in my account to transfer to you. What a distributed network does is that, my identity, which is my public key, the two parts to block. There's a public key and a private key. So my public key, is visible to everybody who is either mining or just transacting and across whatever networks. And I can open up my laptop and show you live stream of blockchain transactions as they come and go.
And that's all public key visibility that you
visibility. Learn. So it's an alphanumeric code, and I can put it on my Twitter profile, as many people do, and say, you know, if you like what I do, you like my Medium stories, or you like my radio interviews, and you want to give me some Ether or some Bitcoin, I can give you an address that you can send it to. It's like a bank account number. It's just with code. The private key is where the critical part is, and this is where so much learning, and I'm going to stress this because people don't realize how important the private key is.
Okay.
If somebody steals money from your bank account, you're going to knock on the bank office door, send them an email, and say, hey, somebody swiped my Visa card or whatever, and spent 10,000 rand at Hermes in New York, and and you'll get it back within, depending on who you bank with, within a period of time. If you lose your private key, goodbye.
That's that.
So if you've got one Bitcoin, which is today worth about 150,000 rand, or 10 Bitcoins, they're gone, and nobody will ever get them back. In fact, estimates are that about 25% of the currently in circulation, about 16.5, close to 17 million Bitcoins, are gone.
Gone.
They're gone.
Justin, what's been such... What I've heard, the lot that I've heard and the little that I know, there's been such an assault of Bitcoin and its strategy and its users, regulations. I'm just throwing words at you that have just come via all the information that we're getting.
It's too much information.
It's too much.
It's too much, and you don't know how to decode it.
Can you just decanter that a little bit, just to, all the negativity that's going around with Bitcoin and all the regulatory things that they are not complying to, or kind of those are the things.
Well, there aren't any regulations.
Okay.
And governments and any organizations, all organizations, banks, all institutions are. Well, they can. Okay. They can. And there are, but the governments are taking different reactions. So just to take a half step back to enter from the previous component about decentralization is that the power sits with the individual.
Okay.
So go back to the blockchain. I can see all the transactions, but I don't know what your 26-digit private key means. Public key means. I don't know who you are. Okay. I may know who you are. If you tell me, here's my wallet address, please send me money. But looking on a blockchain, I'm just looking at millions and millions of transactions happening all the time, and it's just a bunch of code behind them. So nobody can see that except the people who process those transactions, and they're called miners, which is a whole thing about computing power, and it takes the scale of computing power and energy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to make those things work. but the beauty of it is that you need 51% of the network to – and they have visibility in terms of what's in your account. So if I say I'll pay you one Bitcoin and I only have 0.97 Bitcoin in my account, the transaction will fail. Simple as that. The same as your card will get declined. But it's not it's through a network of millions and millions of computers, which are really run by run by computer, by processors and by algorithms that do it.
Algorithms.
And there are obviously human beings behind those things in terms of the ownership structures, blah, blah, blah. But that's not important. The important thing is that it's taken, and it's coming, this is the intro into your last question about regulation, it puts the power into the hands of the individual. For the first time in history, first time in about 2,000 years of history, well, depending on, let's not go backwards, but in a very, very long time, certainly in the last 400 years, citizens have the ability to control their own finances without getting into, and I'm now getting into a political economics arena about centralized government, about fiat currencies, about printing, about quantitative easing, about et cetera, et cetera.
And I want to pick up on that in the next conversation point at the half hour when we're speaking about Project Ubu and what you're doing there. I think there's a real focus that we can develop there. Let's just pull back into the fundamentals of blockchain, cryptocurrency, so Bitcoin, Ethereum. What I understand, and you again correct me if I'm wrong, so what we have is we have a set of, for want of a better phrase, protocols built on really what is a principle of transparency, or a network which is fully transparent. On top of that, then we build these protocols, which is really just sets of code, which act in different ways potentially.
Yeah, they do.
And so Bitcoin is one of those protocols. Then Ethereum is another protocol that behaves in a different way. And so what I'd just like to do for our listeners is help them to understand that that blockchain is firstly here to stay. It's something that is, as you've just highlighted, for the first time in thousands of years, we now have transparency through blockchain.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is then built on top of that through a Bitcoin protocol, which then allows transparency across currency exchange.
Yes.
Is that, and then Ethereum, very similar in that it is perceived as a currency, but it also behaves differently to Bitcoin. And so that's when these different protocols come in. And so then you'll have a protocol that is built to do something else. The agents that you were talking about cut out another middleman.
I'll come to that on, because that's it's exactly what Ethereum is about.
Okay.
And there are two very, very different examples. So Bitcoin was built as a peer-to-peer digital cash that solved this problem of double spending in the digital world.
Yeah, so it's a medium of exchange.
It's many things, because currency has a good currency. This is a debatable point in economics. Has four or five key points. Yeah, one of them is a medium of exchange. The other is a store of value, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what Bitcoin is designed to be is a digital peer-to-peer currency. It is not behaving that way right now, which was predicted, if you read Satoshi's white paper, very much so, because nobody's spending their Bitcoin.
Yeah, this is to Klubi's point, which is the complexity.
Which is because they're hoarding it. Because why would I spend them? You know, if I bought a Bitcoin in January 2017, I probably paid about $900 per coin. That was the price. Okay. In late November, it was $20,000 at a peak. 20 times return. So who's going to spend it in that? So come back to Ethereum, because I know time is
over
the essence.
For this half of the show, yeah.
Yeah.
We still have you for another half.
I know.
We're not going nowhere.
I ain't going nowhere, no, but I'm mindful of your listeners and the time and the subject matter that is quite broad that you want to cover.
Sure.
So Ethereum is built as it's its own protocol. Each one is its own protocol. Each true coin. And there's a difference between a coin and a token as well.
Yes.
But Ethereum is a decentralized platform, an open source platform, which is open to the world and anyone who wants to come and build what we call decentralized applications, DApps. So if you see that word, DApps, that's a decentralized application.
Wow. Okay.
So in essence, you can build anything on it that does just about anything. So let's start in the obvious areas, like a legal contract. It's reduced to code. Number one, let's call it the transfer of a property. So, you know, If you ever bought or sold a house or a property, you know the process that you go through. It takes just to go through the lawyers. It takes weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and fees and taxes and. So you build a smart contract, which is called an ERC-20 contract, which is getting into the technical, which executes automatically once if A plus B. If A is added to B, then C. I'm talking in real layman terms code. So if A meets certain criteria, which are B, then C happens. So when I transfer money from myself to you, for argument's sake, if we're selling I'm buying a property from you, as soon as I transfer the money, the smart contract automatically transfers the rights. The property rights to that to me,
and it's built into the contract. It's
built as that's why it's called a smart contract, because you can build anything around that. So you do away with the need for transfer attorneys. You do away with the need for not yet, and obviously there's jurisdictional law and various other things that complicate it. But the idea is that you do away with the middleman. You do away with a lot of the costs, and you deal peer to peer, and you bring super efficiency into a very inefficient world. Fundamentally, that's what Ethereum is designed.
And then that's the Ethereum protocol that you're building these dApps on.
Yes.
Do you see what I've learned?
Whoa. You know what? I think for the first half hour, that's as much as I am willing to take. I want to move on to Project Uber. Is that okay, Gareth?
Are we going to take a quick break?
Yes, and but then we'll before we end, Justin, what's the first thing you do in the morning? What kind of stuff do you read? I just want to know, what are your mornings like?
One or two things.
Yeah.
I'm either at gym at 5.
Okay, good.
Or I'm behind my laptop from 4:30 till about 7:30. And that is mostly reading and researching.
Reading and researching.
Yeah.
What do you always you like to use the phrase, Louis, leaders are readers, right?
Yeah, leaders are readers.
Leaders are readers, and it's evident here. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to then come back, and what we're going to do is we'll frame it in a particular kind of way, but we're going to be talking about universal basic income, universal basic units. We're going to be talking about reserve banks and their role, and then how all of this stuff comes together. If you don't understand it, that's not a bad thing. What you just need to do is you need to listen to our conversation right after this.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.